Like, if you're going to grade points on a scale of like 1 to 10, my professionalism was negative 2. But personality was 12. So it balanced out.
Welcome to Did I Do That? It's a podcast about graphic designers and the mistakes we make on the way to making something great, because it's all part of the process. I'm Sean Schumacher, and joining me today, a very special guest. He's run with the Bulls in Pamplona, played in the World Series of Poker, and published his own board game, all while working with clients ranging from Nike to Chewy to Camelback and Mattel. He's previously worked at Wieden Kennedy, Sasquatch, Adidas, and Nemo, and these days he's a freelance creative director. It's Matt Graff! Hi!
Woohoo! He's here!
He is here. A long time coming, too. I was going through our email chain before this, and I don't think I'd fully realized that the initial ask was in March of 2022. So yes. It's 2 years now.
You know, it took me a good 18 months to get the courage to say yes.
Yes.
And respond to the email, not just to come on the podcast, but just to respond to the email. And
that makes you better than, I would say, about 50% of the guest asks that I put out, which just never respond to the email.
Well, it truly did get lost unintentionally. And I had the best intentions before.
Yes.
And I kind of have that rule of, like, you know, if you, whatever time period it takes for you to respond to someone, you know, you can allow them that same amount back. So I wasn't, you know, planning to hear from you for another 17 or 18 months. So
yes,
when you responded promptly, I felt we were in a good place.
Yeah. I think I responded like 2 weeks later, because I think it came in like the day before school started, and I teach three classes at a time, and that is just like getting hit over the head repeatedly with a baseball bat. It's really, it takes a lot out of you. So, yeah, it's, and I'm glad we could finally make it work out. And here we are at the start of season, 4, I think that's what we've decided this season number is.
It will be the best season.
I certainly hope so. You know, we because of that, we've built up this whole backlog of bits of potential news stories that we could be tapping into. This has the benefit, though, of this is going to be the episode that goes out basically the week we record it. That never happens. And so we can really talk about a totally current news story. And so what I, of course, want to do is talk about Willie's experience. Have you heard about Willie's experience?
No.
So this is a kind of a pop-up type event that an organization in Glasgow decided to kind of put together. Did they have the license from the Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory owners, who are in fact now Netflix, weirdly? No, of course not. Did they have the sign-off of Warner Brothers? Of course not. Did they have Midjourney? Of course they did. So they sat down and had a bunch of copy generated, and the copy is slapdash. The images are also slapdash. I think we're going through, there's no continuity in styles.
No.
They've not bothered to correct the famous AI great copywriting in images.
And chair-nurturing entertainment.
Yeah, well, it's got cat-gating, which is really important. I'm sorry, cat-gacketing.
Oh, yes.
It's got karchi tons. And, of course, a passadice of sweet teats.
Lollipops is spelled correctly.
Lollipops is spelled correctly.
Which lets you know that the AI robots do love lollipops.
They love live performances and they love lollipops, because those are the only words spelled correctly in this entire thing. Truly a marvel, this modern technology that we have. So this certainly promises some big things, this website. And what was delivered upon those big things was, of course, this.
An empty warehouse with stackable chairs and folding card tables.
And how much daylight would you say is in that warehouse?
Minimal.
It's truly a fascinating sort of series of events that go into it. This is kind of, I think, the picture that shows the height of the decor. Yes. Which is about, I would say, 5 or 6 rented lollipops and lollipop type things.
And technically there are some form of skylights, maybe reminiscent of the glass roof of Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory.
Of course. Yeah. You got to get in that glass elevator and go up to, I presume, the real factory. This is just sort of... sort of the loading area. So what they did with that website is they, you know, got people to go out to this. They had them pay £35, I should say, a ticket to go into this experience, and then got a bunch of actors who were given a AI generated script, which is truly a bizarre thing that Gizmodo posted it up, and I've been going through it. It's kind of miraculous, actually. But it makes as much sense as it does. You know, these actors are being tasked with things that just make no sense. Do you want to describe this particular great image that we have right here?
So we're looking at one of these performers or cast members dressed in a low budget Halloween costume, if that, with a very poorly colored wig. And then there is some sort of scientist beaker bubbling. Maybe this is meant to be a place where you'd get a fun drink.
But, well, no, unfortunately.
Oh, it's not. Is this a candy making?
Apparently there were no beverages provided other than sort of a store brand lemonade and one jelly bean. No chocolate at the chocolate experience.
Hmm. So this is all set dressing.
This sort of makeshift meth lab that they've created for this poor Oompa Loompa performer. But I think what I find most fascinating about it, I was thinking about this. Because I've done events like this, events where you are going into a warehouse space and you're like, I don't know what this is going to be necessarily. And we have this stuff and you kind of got to hope for the best. And I think better productions, I think, know a little sooner what that's going to look like, you know, but when you're on a really tight budget, sometimes that's just how it is. But the thing that I was thinking about the most was when I was in, I think, fourth grade, I had an assignment where one of the things we could do was we just had to tell a story about, I think, a famous person. And we could tell that story in whatever way that we chose. And I was like, I know exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to use my computer and I'm going to make an animation. And I didn't really think about the fact that I didn't, A, know how to make an animation, B, know how to get the animation off my computer and onto a thing that I could take to school, or C, you know, just make any of it good at all. And so I remember, like, kind of halfway doing an animation on the computer and then, like, taking my mom's, like, big VHS camera and, like, videotaping my computer monitor and then bringing that tape into school and everyone laughing at me. And this feels like that. This feels like a fourth grader came up with an idea and really didn't have any of the knowledge about what goes into making a thing. It just spiraled. And it's not till the very end that you realize, like, oh, this is a complete disaster.
What's unfortunate, though, is in your example, you were in control and you ultimately felt the pain or the punishment. What's unfortunate is that we're seeing now that these AI tools are enabling people,
yes,
to con other people out of money, whether intentional or not. I'm curious to know, is the target audience, is the attendee a child in a family who really loves Willy Wonka?
I have to think so.
And then that's unfortunate for them.
Yeah.
If it was one of these pop-up clout influencer events, then maybe this is, you know, full circle punishment on them.
Yeah.
And
the people who pay admission to go to the Museum of Selfies in Seattle, not to call out any specific institution. But yeah, that, you know, you kind of get what you pay for at a place like that.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe it aligns with the story of Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
All the children wanted too much and ultimately they paid the price. They got stuck in a tube or fell down a golden goose chute. And so ultimately this aligns with the story of Willy Wonka, that, like, you have to be of pure heart to ultimately get the chocolate.
Matt, that is an angle on this that I had never thought of before, that all of the bits in Willy Wonka are about child punishment. They are about children who want things that they they ultimately should not get. And this is truly the ultimate example of a child getting just slam dunk slapped down.
Yeah. How dare that child dream
how
of having
dare
a fun
you.
Afternoon?
How dare you want to go to a magical land of lollipops? You deserve this barely dressed warehouse.
Thank you, AI.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, AI, for really helping with this incredible journey for some children of learning the realities of what it's like to fail. That's what Willie McDuff teaches us, is don't dream, kids.
If this travels here to Portland, will you let me know?
Yes. Oh, my God. If this actually should travel, like, this is the thing, is like, now there are, now that the set dressing has been pulled away and we can truly see the rented tables and chairs for what they really are, like, I would certainly pay money to go see yeah. this thing.
It's the, like, unintentional defunct land
yeah.
kind of modern day age traveling roadshow.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Portland still has plenty of disused warehouses. Granted, a lot of them turned into weed storage facilities, which unfortunately became a problem at a previous job that I worked at that relied on Portland's supply of vacant warehouses. But yeah, like, I would love to see some of them transformed into, you know, Willy's chocolate experience. Please, please, someone make it happen. Mr. Beast, make it happen. All right. Yeah. So anyway, that's Willy's chocolate experience. A strange start for us here in the year 2024. But Matt, yeah. So you started out at Wieden & Kennedy back in the day as an internship. Am I right about that?
Yes. I was thinking back. It was my sophomore year of college. I went to the University of Oregon and I was applying for internships, even though I was maybe a year or two younger than maybe when you'd normally do that. Because I was told you got to get that real life experience.
Yeah.
It'll look good when you're going out to search for a job in the real world after you graduate. And so I thought, why not take a look and see what's available?
And it's tempting to do it early, even though, like, it is much harder to do it early.
Yeah.
You know,
and it was like, low risk. If it doesn't happen, not the end of the world.
Fair enough. Yeah.
So I was applying to a couple places here in Portland. I'm originally from Portland, so I was planning to be back here
yeah.
in the summers anyways. And I went to the U of O Journalism School that has an advertising program. And so with Wieden & Kennedy being maybe the largest or most well-known agency in Portland, someone would come through and give a talk here or there. And so that's how we were made aware that, oh, there's going to be an internship application in a week, a month, I don't remember. But so I thought, should I do this? Should I not? And then I thought, well, they're going to get hundreds of applications. And so I put it off. And then a day or two before it needed to be due for submission, I thought, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to apply. There's no harm, no foul. And the application asked for, like, a cover letter, finished student portfolio work. I mean, at this time in, what year was it? Maybe 2002 or so.
Oh.
Yeah.
So are they wanting, like, slides at that point still,
too? I mean,
too?
It was something, like, printed and bound,
oh.
and you mailed it in a large envelope, and
yeah.
it cost $10 shipping, had to be postmarked by a certain date. And so, because of the deadline and because of maybe how young or inexperienced I was, I decided to not follow the rules. And this was maybe the first example of what I call zagging. Like, if everyone zigs, you zag. Of
yeah.
kind of like breaking the rules, standing out, forming a personal and emotional connection. I wasn't maybe doing this as intentionally as I would do now, but I intuitionally did it. Is that a word?
Yeah, close enough.
Yeah, whatever.
I like it.
So mine was pure creative thinking, no polish, all humor. Like, if you're going to grade points on a scale of like 1 to 10, my professionalism was -2, but personality was 12. So it balanced out. So, you know, I thought, okay, well, what can I put together that will show who I am and what I like to do? And so I got like a peachy folder and 8.5 by 11 printer paper. And I went to town with the Sharpie. So instead of polished work that you've done in your portfolio school. I just did marker comps, creative ideas for campaigns or fun ideas, and just sketched them out poorly with a marker.
And you're leaning into this school aesthetic, like the peachy folder, the classic folder that's got sports boys all over the front of it.
And then I thought, well, if I'm leaning into this unprofessionalism, what could I do so that I'm showing that this is intentional?
Yeah.
So I printed out, I think it was maybe my senior high school photo, you know, where I'm wearing like a collared shirt and my hair is combed and the lighting's great. And I printed that out. And then I took that Sharpie and I started defacing it. I gave myself devil horns and, you know, blacking out teeth and an eye patch and tattoos. And, you know, on the deadline day, I packaged it all up, paid for the postage, and then I didn't hear anything for months. And then I got a phone call out of the blue that said, hey, we got your application and we've selected you. There was no interview process or anything like that. It was just interview, or, you know, the internship starts in a month. Do you want it?
Yeah.
And the answer, of course, is yes. And then when I got there and got established and was working for a couple months, I asked someone when I found out that they were one of the key deciders. I said, why did you choose me? And they said, well, if there were 100 people that applied, we went and looked at maybe who was qualified, who knew the Adobe software, who was in an advertising program or a design program. We narrowed it down to, let's say, the top 10. And then at that point, we figured this is someone who's here to learn. They're not going to be an expert by any means. But what kid do we want to hang around us for the next 3 or 4 months? Who's going to be annoying or who's going to be fun?
Yeah.
And ultimately, that was the deciding factor, that I came across as someone who was fun and willing to experiment, and that landed me the position. And so I use that as the first time in my career where I thought, oh, wow, going against the grain actually can work for you. It might not work every time, but it does work sometimes. And it was that emotional and personal connection rather than the like checking the box professionalism that got me in the door.
Well, and I think that makes a lot of sense. Like, you know, especially the advertising world is not, it's not a world where people other than salespeople are showing up in suits and ties.
Yeah.
Like you are trying to come up with the weirdest possible ideas. And Wyden in particular, I think, is known for coming up with some of the weirdest possible ideas, especially as of late. So I can see how that would be a really good fit. Like, what do you end up doing when you're there?
Yeah, you know, a lot of it was assisting, learning, shadowing. I would say that I learned a lot when it came to the Adobe programs. If I was, you know, functional before, I really got the education on like how to learn layers and masking and do all this work.
Nothing teaches like having a deadline.
Exactly. And then like, you know, maybe this was when there was a lot more printed magazine ads. But if ESPN or Nike was running a page ad, I would then resize it. You know, in one publication, it was 8.5 by 11. Another one, it's 8.5 by 10, 8.25 by 11 1/4. You know, so whatever the case may be, I had to take these files and stretch them and make them fit for the different publication sizes. So a lot of it was like production. A lot of it was just shadow and learning, which was very nice of them because I wasn't contributing, but they invested in my education. And then some of it was contributing conceptually. I remember that there was one project for Nike soccer, and it was more for like an international soccer program where the creative team wanted to promote the idea of like playing soccer without needing the structure of 11 versus 11 and a goal. And how do we help make the perception that it's acceptable to play 2-on-2 in your driveway or 3-on-1 in an alley? And
this is spitting in the face of FIFA.
Exactly.
If I learned anything from that incredible movie that FIFA made about itself and the importance of the rules of soccer, FIFA is the most important organization that's ever existed.
Yes. But especially in maybe some other foreign countries where soccer is a part of the life from when you're, you know, 1 year old.
Yeah.
It was in other countries. How do we grow that passion that you can play soccer in many different forms? You can play it, you know, take a t-shirt and bunch of rubber bands and some duct tape on the wall, and you can play a form of soccer that can help grow your skills. And so it was a project of how can Nike, you know, not necessarily sell more cleats or balls, but how can they use their cachet and their platforms? And so ultimately it culminated in creating like a zine that we made. And so while there was 8 people who worked on the project and I was the 8th most important person on that project, they let me be a part of the concepting and they let me be a part of the creation and the sketching and the comping to sell in the idea to Nike. And, you know, they let me participate in the all-nighters. I think that was my very first all-nighter where it was like 36 hours straight to meet a presentation, hand it off to the art director and the copywriter who presented it. And then me as an intern, like crashing in the sleep pod or going home early and, you know, just cutting my chops and experiencing that. And it was fun.
Oh yeah. That's probably the age about which a all-nighter is still possible. I could not fathom doing that anymore at my advanced age. But yeah, like you're getting to do actual work and stuff there. I mean, it sounds like it's a really like engaging experience. You're meeting people too. It sounds like,
yeah, it was super fun. And even though I was an intern, I felt included and accepted. I played on their summer softball team. I ran on their Hood to Coast team. I felt comfortable enough that there was an opportunity for me to like maybe leave my own legacy or kind of like prank, which is kind of in my nature.
Yeah.
And so if you've ever been to the Wieden & Kennedy Portland office, you enter into this lobby that's 2 stories tall. So maybe the ceiling is 25 feet tall and the wall extends, I don't know, maybe 40 feet deep. Then there's this grand staircase that takes you up to where you enter the workspace.
Yeah.
And this lobby is sometimes used for like art shows, et cetera, et cetera.
There's a giant wooden beaver in it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then along that wall, for every full-time employee, there is a portrait. And while their professional portraits done, they use the same photographer for the last 20 years, they're very humorous. And the idea is that it's showing the personality or the hobbies or whatever of each employee so that you can kind of get a sense of the humor and the fun and the flair of the people who make up this office. And I noticed that going on the staircase, that the wall wasn't completely full. So it was organized where each row kind of ended and it was making this diagonal line. And there was one spot missing. Cut to a couple weeks later when I'm doing some project, I found a storage closet and I found the actual frame. And I found some old photos of people who must not have worked there anymore and they just got thrown in the closet. So that hatched this idea of, well, what if I, when I leave, I put my picture up on the wall without permission? And so I thought, oh, I have a camera. I know Photoshop. Let's do this. And so I strategically took a photo of myself so that maybe I wouldn't be as visible. So I borrowed my friend's trumpet and I was wearing like a baseball hat and I was a little bit racked out of focus. So if someone was like, who's that? They wouldn't question that. Oh, that was that intern that's not here anymore. So it was a strategic photo art direction choice as well. So then I scanned theirs, printed it up, Photoshopped mine in. And then I came back at like midnight. Hey, they gave me the keys to the building. They still work at midnight. And I hung it up on the wall maybe about a week before my internship was up. And I didn't tell a soul. And then every time I came back to Portland or visited that office, I could see that it was still hung up on the wall.
Wow.
And they, when they hire new people, they go through this process and they hang them up on the wall. And when people leave or get laid off, I don't know, I feel like they just take that one person's off, but there's not someone with a list who's constantly checking, is there the correct number? And so I slipped through the cracks for 7 years and I was up on that wall.
7 years.
Yeah.
That's the other thing that I keep thinking about with this story. Like, you know, you, this phantom member of staff, 7 years is like long enough time that no one is even going to remember.
Yeah.
Like a time when it wasn't there, like that moment of discovery. Who is this phantom trumpeter? What's going on? Who is this person?
Yeah. And I think
how many emails were exchanged right there?
And I think you walk by this wall and there's so much to look at, but you don't necessarily focus on it too much, especially the people who are working there. They're coming in and out of the building. They've got things to do, ideas on their mind.
Yeah.
You know, it's usually visitors to the building who will stop and look and say, oh, that person has their head in a bucket of water. And this person has a a guinea pig on their shoulder or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, and you're moving fast through that lobby.
So this one has a trumpet. Yeah. That's all it is.
And it blends right in. It's just part of the firmament of the building, and it was for 7 years. That's incredible. That's kind of your closing of that internship. You go back to Eugene. Mm-hmm. You finish up school. Like, what happens then? Where do you go from there?
Well, I will say that going back to college for 2 more years was hard.
Uh-huh. Now that you actually know what advertising
exactly.
is like.
I kind of got a taste of how fun design and advertising can be.
Yeah.
And while I love school and I love learning, I think that's probably the only thing that kept me there. It's that I like learning, and I thought I have to get my degree before I go into this industry, which probably isn't true, but I did. And so then the next summer I was able to have almost like a second internship at Wieden & Kennedy. They asked me back for freelance for that couple months. And that was another zag, is that the agency, the email was using Outlook at the time. And I realized that there was a new feature at the time of scheduling emails. So I scheduled an email 9 months out that said something to the effect of like, "Hey, Mike, do you remember me? I'm Matt. I don't work here anymore, but for some reason my email does. Can I come back this next summer?" And then I sent one to Sherry, and I sent one to Joe, and I sent one to Damien, and I sent one to all these people who work there. And they thought it was pretty clever, and that prompted them at the right time to ask me back for the next summer.
Did you schedule it with the understanding that, like, maybe they're going to take away your password, but they're not going to deactivate the account?
Yes, completely.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And so that was the next summer. I kind of had a second internship. And then after that, graduating from school, put together a portfolio, which at this time, while I did have a website, it was more commonplace to, when you go to interview, you have a printed portfolio.
Yeah, you have the book.
Yeah, and it was bound.
Yeah.
I paid to, you know, I had to, like, as a college student who was pinching pennies, I had to figure out, well, how many copies do I want printed? If I get 10 printed versus 20 printed, and that makes the average cost this or that.
Yeah.
I was interested in an agency in Seattle. I'm going to have to mail one to them. It's kind of... do I ask for it back or not?
And that's the crazy part about that system, is like, there would be like, do they keep it? Do you ask for it back? Like, do they make you take it back?
Yeah.
Like,
and so
it was all up in the air.
All of that I had to factor in. I'm like, well, I've got $400 in my bank account, and this is costing $200.
Yeah.
Oh no. Ew. Hopefully this pays off. But ultimately, it did pay off. I interviewed at a couple places in Seattle and a couple places in Portland. Nothing landed immediately, which allowed me to go travel to Europe. But for graduation from college, I think one of my parents had paid. They said, "We'll pay for an airplane ticket."
Hey.
And my friend Jeff was over there in Italy. So I flew out and met up with him. We ran with the bulls in Pamplona.
As
we traveled to Spain. And I got an email while I was in Europe that said, "Hey, we have a position. You know, can you come interview on Monday?" And I said, "No, but I could interview on Tuesday," because I was flying back from Europe on Monday.
Oh no. Yeah. Wait, so you're going to be super jet lagged.
I was
interview.
Super jet lagged, but it worked out. Ooh. And it was at an agency called Leopold Cattell here in Portland. And that was my first real job out of college.
Wow.
Yeah. It was as a production designer.
So you're like, you've had this whole journey. You've literally run with the bulls, and metaphorically at Wieden & Kennedy. And now you're back in Portland. You're working in advertising, like, proper. Like, what do you start to do at Leopold Cattell?
Yeah. Or LKP, if you want to keep
LKP.
It Leopold Cattell and Partners. So at LKP, again, my position was production designer, which means that they have an art director, they have some designers. Mostly I was there doing resizes and making sure that everything was prepared correctly. And then I would help with design and some concepting when time allowed, or when there was too much work that they would give some to me. I definitely didn't get first choice, nor did I deserve it, but it was good to see. I mean, I worked at Wieden & Kennedy, where I was the smallest cog in the biggest machine of creativity.
Yes.
Working on these national and international projects and clients. And then to go to a more local agency where, even though I'm the smallest cog, I have a lot more influence and it's working on regional and local clients. It was good to see what it looked like working at a small agency where it felt more like a family, where you knew the names of every single person. You know, you could go and touch every single person because you all sat in the same giant room.
If you hung up your portrait on a wall, someone's going to notice.
Yes. Yeah. Well, at that point, it would be the only portrait on the wall. So they definitely notice. But yeah.
You hang it over the fireplace.
Going from 350 people. Yeah. 350 people down to maybe 15 to 20 people. And that was a good feeling of feeling like you knew everyone and they were invested in you. And I felt that way in the design studio at Wine and Kennedy, but I didn't know 200 people's names when I was there. People would be walking by, I had no clue who they were, what they did. And so, yeah, LKP was a great place to work at for while I was there. Unfortunately, I had my first experience with a layoff.
Ooh.
And it happens. It was, you know, last hired, first fired. With agencies, you lose an account and they have to make choices that are not based upon your performance, but just eliminating a position because the work's not there anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. It happens. It happens all over the place in advertising and in design, too. So you've survived your first layoff.
Yes.
Like, what do you do? Also, like, when about is this? Is this kind of going into the Great Recession or like?
This is just before. So this is probably 2005.
Okay. So the times are still riding high.
Yeah.
Are great.
I wasn't too worried at the time. I was thinking, oh man, how am I going to make my car payment? Am I going to have to move back in with my mom or dad? No, I'm going to collect that sweet unemployment check of $100 a week or whatever it was at the time.
Well, you can pay your Portland rent in 2005 five times over with that.
Luckily, I lived in an apartment with two other people. Ooh. And so I was able to save some money that way. But, you know, eating hot dogs and PB&J and stuff like that, getting by. That landed me, you know, I looked for freelance work. And ultimately, that led me to working at an agency called Sasquatch. And so, again, I think that was 2005 or 2006 is when I started there.
You located the Sasquatch.
Found it.
And started working for him.
And again, the initial connection was that two of the founders of that agency were U of O grads. And so during my time there, they had come to speak to classes, much in the way that different working professionals come and speak in your classes. They, you know, made an impact on me and I remembered them and I reached out to them. And when the timing worked out, I was able to come in and freelance for a little bit and ultimately land a job there. Again, starting as a designer and then graduating up to art director after a year or two.
Yeah. And I think that's also such a good reminder for the students listening to this, that like, even though school will be done, like the people that you meet, even if they're not other students, like just the people who come in and, you know, look over your work or talk, like those are connections that you could make.
And you should reach out to if it's a good connection.
There is no better like door opener than, hey, I'm a student or I was a student. And like that really like that fosters connection. So you're like starting in Sasquatch now.
Yeah.
Like what do you end up doing at Sasquatch?
So for the maybe first year or two, it was designing catalogs, print ads, billboards, you know, maybe helping out with some concepting for some campaigns that maybe would have a radio component to it. This is as it's shifting towards digital deliverables as well.
And this is a small enough agency that you're kind of all over the map doing all of these things.
So this agency when I started maybe was 10 people. So the creative department was two creative directors who were two of the four founders. One was an art direction background and one was a copywriting background. So they were really like the senior team.
Yeah.
Then there were three of us that were around my age who they were kind of like the junior team. And at times we would get to pitch, the different teams would work together or some formation of that. And there were times when the junior team won out. There was one for Widmer Brothers Brewing. They were really trying to grow the Hefeweizen beer, which was their kind of like founding beer. And it was common here in Portland and maybe Oregon, but they were trying to grow regionally to the West Coast. So we were able to do some research trips down to other growing markets like San Diego and Phoenix.
Nothing wrong with that.
And then ultimately we pitched an idea that got sold in, and that was maybe like the first large campaign that I would say that I helped steer. And so that was fun. But and so that gave me a feeling of I'm growing. I'm no longer a production designer. I'm a graphic designer, and now I'm an art director.
Yeah.
That my ideas are being valued just as much as my technical skills, and I'm given more responsibility. So I ended up working there for 7 or 8 years, but you know, not everything was roses there.
No.
I was remembering back to the first time that I had a failure that I could recall in my career, and it was probably in that first year at Sasquatch, and it was for a client that I hadn't worked on. It was a previous client, and they just wanted like a reprint of some of their branding, their letterheads, their business cards, etc. And I forget who it was. It was one of the founders of the agency asked, hey, can you go on this press check? It should be pretty easy. Whatever, whatever. Can you do that for us? And I said, yes. And I'd never been on a press check.
Yeah,
before.
You had no idea what a press check was.
I knew that there were press checks and people went to
you
go.
You knew of them.
They were checking the pressing.
Yes, this does seem to be printed. Yeah. I agree.
The logo is in the right place.
Mm. It paper, was, huh? It was That's the a
wrong,
good choice.
It was the wrong color. Who knew?
Whoops.
Yeah.
Whoops, whoops, whoops. Ah, yes, press.
And, you know, I'd seen sheets and proofs that had been brought back, but I was never the person. And maybe I tagged along, but I had never been the person whose responsibility it was to approve what was being printed.
Yeah.
And so I don't remember the specifics of it, but I remember when I got there, they used some terminology that I didn't know. And they asked me, does this flibba flabba flubba? And I said, yeah, I think so. Yeah, looks good. I don't remember, but I might have signed something, which is
the
know?
Little tiny slip of paper that they always have.
That I approved it. And so then they ran it and they went with it. And then a day or two later, that company calls our agency. Hey, the colors don't match. What went on? And then that founder came to me and said, hey, what happened? They're saying the colors don't match. And I don't remember if I gave the honest answer. I don't think I did. I think there must have been a miscommunication. And ultimately, I was embarrassed. What I should have done was when that person asked me, can you go on the press check? I should have said, yes, I can. I'm willing to. But what should I be doing?
Yeah, what the hell is this?
I had that opportunity.
What entails this?
But I was too proud, or I was too much of the mindset of fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
And I even thought I had the opportunity of asking the person who works at the printer to say, what should we be looking for here? And I've learned since then, you can ask them. Guess what they do all day, every day? They match colors.
Yeah, that's
and they find
100%
registration.
Of their job.
You can lean on them. You don't have to be the person who knows everything. And
no.
So ultimately,
they care about it a lot.
Yeah.
They have strong opinions on it.
So I made the wrong choice. I guided them in the wrong way. And I felt devastated about it. Ultimately, I think the agency paid a couple $100 to get it reprinted again. Luckily, it was a short run of a spot color or two. It wasn't four color with a gloss and a matte and a this and a that.
Yeah, this isn't a whole issue of a magazine that has to be pulped because of this. That's not too bad.
But it was the first time when I realized that I don't know everything, that I'm not hot shit, that it's okay to ask for help.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it's a scary thing to be asked. And like, especially in a small shop like that, I can understand why it didn't feel like, you know, maybe you had anyone that you could go to ask for advice with that. But like, in terms of disasters, that could have been much worse.
Yes.
You know.
That's a good segue.
Yeah.
Segue. Much worse. The worst thing that I had happen ever in my career was on a photo shoot. So I'm probably 3 or 4 years into working at Sasquatch. I've supervised some photo shoots before, whether that's a product in studio or model in studio. But the most fun ones, for me at least, are going on location. And so here I am. I'm maybe on my third photo shoot of this scale. We're in the middle of Wyoming on a 2-lane highway with the major cities, I don't know, an hour or two away.
Ooh.
And there's an accident. And I had to call my boss, one of the founders, and have a phone conversation while I'm driving, saying, hey, there's been an accident. The photographer almost died, but he's in an ambulance.
Ah!
I think we're going to have to cancel the photo shoot. How do we tell the client? So the backstory.
Ooh, yeah. We're going to need to unpack that. What happened?
And we'll be back with the podcast after the word from these sponsors. See, that those are the teasers that you need if you could cut to the sponsor promos.
See, sponsors,
right,
this is what you could be getting. This is the beautiful show meat that we could be framing around this.
Do you like measuring? Do you ever need a straight edge to cut with an X-Acto blade? Use Westcott rulers. Find the stainless steel rulers. Use promo code Did I Do That at checkout to save 10% off of one metal ruler. That's WestcottRulers.org.
One individual metal ruler ordered from Westcott. I'm sure there's shipping on that. Shipping on those like one-off websites are usually like very reasonable.
The promo code does not apply to shipping.
$70 shipping or anything like that.
I hope someone goes to whatever
WestcottRuler.org,
I think I said, and tries to type in that promo code. Let's see if it works.
Famous nonprofit organization, Westcott Rulers. Go there now. Type in promo code Did I Do That? Or promo code Did I Do That? If they have a promo cone, you can put it in there too. But put in Did I Do That and see what happens. And if it gives you 10% off your ruler order, your individual ruler order.
And now back to the podcast.
Not good on orders of two or more rulers. So you're like in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
What happened? How did this happen?
So the product that we were shooting for, the client, was a sunglass company that made protective sunglasses and eyewear for different scenarios. And this campaign was specifically for people who are riding motorcycles.
Okay.
Some states require you to wear helmets. They're like helmet laws. And a couple states require eye protection. When you're driving down the road at 70 miles an hour, a tiny little pebble hitting your face is devastating.
Yeah, it seems like it would be bad.
Yeah.
So you know, just imagining when I've gotten a rock chip in my windshield, if that had gone into me, I think I would be unhappy.
Exactly.
I think it would be more than just calling the rock chip people.
Yeah. So these are protective sunglasses with the protective lenses. They also have like gaskets that help keep wind out of your eyes, et cetera, et cetera. But we were captured.
You sound like incredible glasses. If only there was some website that I could go to.
I know, yeah.
Go to Westcott Rulers and see if they sell glasses and then use our offer code.
If you're interested, this company is called Wiley X. They still are in existence today, and I worked on that account for 7 or 8 years. It was a great one. But this photo shoot was to capture people riding motorcycles and being true and authentic to that. So we reached out and we found a motorcycle photographer. He'd been doing it for decades. Maybe 30 or 40 years, and he still does it today, 20 years later.
God, he all that he must shoots, be a cool job.
All he shoots, he loves motorcycles, and he shoots studios. He goes to the rallies. He's in with the culture. You know, he's authentic to it. When we say we want this kind of backdrop, he goes, oh, I know people who live here. I can get some riders together. We'll meet at the Harley shop, and we'll ride out from there. And so he has shot while riding. And the way that he normally does it is that he would sit in the back of a pickup truck with the gate down with his like feet dangling over the side. And he says,
okay.
And he says that this helps him because he tells the person driving the truck, set the cruise control at whatever speed, even if we're going around a corner, because that way I won't lurch forward and back and I can feel the sway and I can hold on. And that way he can like hold the camera up high and it can look like a crane shot. He can hold the camera down low and it looks like close to the road and it looks really cool. So this is how he did it.
I suppose so.
But that's not what we did.
Oh, no.
So we thought that's a little sketch.
Yeah.
And so he was actually harnessed in to the back of the truck. He had like a rock climbing harness belt on and he had like a rope that he was tied into just in case.
Yeah, this seems very reasonable.
So I thought, okay, this is good. The rope is good. This is a good improvement.
Yeah.
So we are leaving Colorado, where he's based out of, and we're heading to Wyoming. And we're going to like have a home base, like a house that we're renting, all the motorcycle riders that are coming with us. We're all going to stay there. We're going to capture some lifestyle stuff. It's a couple day, like a 2 or 3 day trip. And we're just trying to get out to the house in Wyoming.
Yeah.
At this point, we don't have someone who can drive his truck. So I'm going to drive his truck until we get there. Then his assistant, who's currently riding one of the motorcycles, will then drive the truck for the rest of the photo shoot. But for these first 2 hours, my role is to drive, and he's going to shoot some of these extra pickup shots while we're getting out there.
Okay.
So I set the cruise control to 2 miles over the speed limit, just like he says. That way there aren't people coming up behind as he's like shooting backwards. We're driving, and something happens where I hear what sounds like a gun go off. A bang. The loudest bang I've ever heard. I look in the rearview mirror to see what it was, and I see the photographer tumbling out of the back of the truck.
Fuck.
And roll over out of my view. And then I see seven motorcycles behind me all swerving left, right to avoid from hitting him. At that point, I panic a little bit. Oh no, what has happened? Slam on the brakes. I turn his truck sideways and I start stopping traffic who's coming at us because I see that there's a bunch of cars. I don't know how he's doing. I don't know what's going on.
He's just laying in the road way back there.
Yeah. What happened was that he normally doesn't have this rope that he's relying on. He's using his body weight, the momentum to feel as the car's going. Because he had this rope, he leaned on it and he gave a little bit to it. And ultimately, it snapped. And that's what the sound was. It was like the nylon. We went back and looked and like it was burnt because it had snapped.
Yeah.
He tumbled over the back. Camera hit the ground, shattered. He hit the ground. One of the motorcycle fenders hit him. And then everyone else avoided him. He ended up being okay. He broke his arm. I think he broke a rib or two.
Wow.
He was in shock. When by the time I got back, he was like, "Where's Matt? Where's Matt?" And I'm like, and he's laying in the road.
Yeah.
And the other motorcycle riders who are his friends or people he knows have kind of gathered to help him. And someone's calling 911 to get an ambulance out. And he's like, "Matt, I'm so sorry. I've never not delivered on a shoot." And I was like, "Hey man, it's okay. You're talking. You're alive. Don't worry about the shoot." And so it was funny. And then he gathered everyone around. "Okay. When the cops come, nobody talk to the cops." This is him advising us. He's like, "I don't know if we have all the permits. I don't know since it was my car, but Matt was driving. Just nobody talk to the cops. Get me in an ambulance and then head back and we'll figure this out later."
Wow.
He had this plan. And the cops, when the cops got there and the ambulance got there and they got him off, then they started grilling. What happened? Who was driving? Wait, was he standing in the back of it? Oh, like they were trying to piece together. You knew the motorcycle that hit him? They really didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
Ultimately, we all drove away, not getting in trouble. And then that's when I'm calling my boss at the agency to say, "What do we do?" And he said, "Okay, well, it's okay. You're right. Everyone's health is the most important. And I'll call the client in the morning and let them know what happened."
Yeah.
What ended up happening was the client got word of it prior to that. Some of these motorcycle riders, I think one of them worked at the Harley dealership, who talked to their sales rep who got it back. But the client was great. They understood that there's risks and things happened. They sent flowers to the hospital before we even talked to them.
That's sweet.
Yeah. And then we rescheduled it 6 months later. We found some stock photography that would work. The Nikon camera, like he sent the body in and they were able to like get the files off of
this completely decimated camera.
The lens was shattered. The body was all dented in, but the little card was fine in it. And we got some photos off of it. And then when we did it the second time later that year, we had some different rules in place. Nobody will be riding in the back of a van. Nobody will.
Yeah.
So, he was able to do it where he rode on the passenger seat in the back of a motorcycle where he could get the shots that he wanted in a safer way. And I had another rule. I'm not driving the vehicle. I don't want that nightmare scenario that I can still close my eyes to this day and see that video in my mind of watching someone tumble out of the back of the car.
That horrible snap and then just, wow, that's... That he survived that is remarkable, because that, like, I mean, also people I think who've been in those states on those single lane highways know that speed limit is high too. So this is speed limit plus two.
And the fact that like we called the ambulance and maybe it took an hour to get there.
Yeah.
But that he was in a state of shock, but also of enough well-being that he was able to like survive the 2 hours to get into surgery.
Yeah. And that he's immediately thinking of you.
I know. Like, I know.
Hey, are you okay? I know this. Yeah. Wow.
He, they took away his phone when he got to the hospital, but then he called me. He like got out of his bed,
yeah.
Walked over, grabbed his phone from across the room and called me, even though he wasn't supposed to. Later that night, hey, maybe we can get some of the images off the card. I'm still so sorry. Yeah.
We can make this work. Damn
the,
it.
The silver lining out of it was that the photo assistant that he had on that shoot, who is one of the guys who was riding the motorcycle, who is a photographer himself. He, a couple years later, branched out from being an assistant to being his own photographer. He moved to Portland and now he's one of my good friends.
Wow.
So friendship born out of trauma.
Truly, truly. few more traumatic photo shoots for a sunglasses brand than that. Wow, that's a hell of a situation. But it's incredible that you were able to work through it and actually yank victory from the rolling jaws of defeat. Yeah, so like, you know, this is all within your time at Sasquatch, but like eventually like you decide to move on from Sasquatch.
Yeah. I'd worked there for 7 or 8 years and it was great. Like you were mentioning the recession times.
Uh-huh.
We got through that 2008 recession as an agency. They didn't lay anybody off,
that's
I believe.
That's incredible.
I mean, it's when you're a small agency and you're operating lean,
yeah,
there isn't a whole lot of like fat to trim.
True.
While, you know, the larger agencies were laying off a quarter of their people. I had friends who worked at other places that got laid off at that time. I felt very fortunate at Sasquatch, you know, and the founders, I feel like created an environment. And it sounds hokey. We're like, oh, we're all family. But I mean, you work in a small agency and you get to know these people and you really care about them.
Yeah.
And when times are tough, if the founders take a pay cut to keep the agency running, that's very admirable. I really appreciate that they were able to get the whole group of us through those times. I kind of felt after 7 or 8 years, I had done the growing that I could there, that there might not be any upward mobility within my career there. And maybe wasn't as inspired as much. I had mentioned that, like, I really like learning. Probably I would say that like the things that drive me in my career are like curiosity and problem solving.
Yeah.
There's always a new client. There's always a new creative way to do something. There's a new media that you have to learn and you can get curious and ideate and solve those problems. And then I really just like that satisfaction of like, I found this creative way and it's done. It's going to help this brand or this company do this, or it's going to help communicate to that person. What's the next thing to learn?
Yeah.
And so I was taking some night classes at PNCA to kind of like broaden my horizon. There was one that was a packaging design class.
Hey.
I had never done packaging design before, nor am I good at it, but that's why you take the class, a continuing education class. And there was like an editorial or a magazine design class. Just new ways to keep me growing.
Yeah.
And ultimately I was like quietly trying to find what that next stop on the journey would be. I had been at a full-time job for 7 or 8 years. And so I was able to look for something that was maybe freelance, which was kind of scary to go to have maybe stable income. You may have a car payment or rent or a mortgage. But my wife at that time had a full-time job and she said, hey, go, if this is the right opportunity, go freelance. And I was lucky to get in at Adidas in their global brand design department. At the time, there was maybe 10 people here in Portland.
Yeah, this would have been probably right around when they were kind of starting up their Portland operation.
Yeah. I did a lot of photo art direction. I really grew my chops there. I was looking back on it and it's like, we probably had a photo shoot every week.
Yeah.
And you know, social media is blowing up this time.
Yeah. And that kind of product stuff, you cannot have enough shots of it.
While there might be 2 or 3 large athlete photo shoots every year, the product photo shoots are just constant.
Yeah.
There's a new colorway for Mother's Day. There's a new colorway for Flag Day. I don't know. But there's people who are sneakerheads who want those different colors and designs on shoes. And we get to help. How do we tell that story? How do we make the product look good? How do we make people want to click buy?
Yeah.
And, you know, while maybe I didn't love every colorway or every shoe, I love the process of art directing and studio like set building. And sometimes it was, in the studio. Sometimes it was on a basketball court. Sometimes it was somewhere else that wasn't basketball related. We had a good variety of like practical effects, you know, trying to do everything for real. Like if we want the, there was like an Avengers pack that came out. Like one shoe looked like Thor, one shoe looked like the Hulk, et cetera, et cetera. So we wanted to make it look like they were like fighting in a concrete, you know, area. And on these movies, they're like destroying Manhattan. There's all this rubble.
The shoes are fighting?
Oh, I don't know. The shoes are heroic. Maybe they've won the fight. Yeah, you know, that left shoe really was mad at the right shoe.
Well, that shoe just started out as a regular shoe, but then it got really kind of big and oversized. You know, it's very loose when you try to wear it, but it's angry.
But when doing that, we do practical effects. We figure out how can we make concrete look this way? And we'd actually pour it and break it and smash it. Or if we would want to do something that looked like it was on broken glass and just making something up, we would actually break the glass and rearrange it rather than like figuring out how to do it in Photoshop or 3D. There were times that we had to render out some stuff, but the practical effects of fire and building and smoke and fog and laser lights, that was really cool.
Yeah, it's true. Like, nothing looks as good as the real thing. Like, there's no... I've done this a number of times with ice, which is always bad because it results in me cursing quite loudly for a long time trying to deal with the ice. But, like, ice looks different than fake ice. Yeah. You know what real ice looks like.
And you know what a real Willy Wonka looks like, too.
Exactly. McDuff. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Willy McDuff.
Of course, we must. This is, again, not a licensed product of the Netflix, you know, corporation that now owns the Willy Wonka intellectual property. But no, this is Willy McDuff, a completely different character. Yeah, it's like nothing quite compares to the real thing.
So yeah, Adidas was great. I was able to learn some new skills there, especially when it came to like photo art direction, when it came to like managing, you know, just working at a larger company coming from a smaller agency. You're working with more vendors, photographers, videographers, designers who are helping you, production designers. Also learned just like the logistics of design and what it takes to produce content at a high production value. Knowing that sometimes you're not designing for final execution, you're making files that need to be distributed worldwide in different languages, or maybe with a different athlete's photo from a different country.
Oh, yeah.
Like localization. So sometimes you don't get to choose the font that you want because we have to use a brand font that can be translated a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
So that's a limitation. So if you can't affect how the font makes you feel, what can you affect? And so fun problem solving in that way, creating a toolkit.
Yeah. So like you're at Adidas, you're doing these things. Like how long do you end up staying at Adidas? Like
I was at Adidas for almost 3 years. And as they were redistributing where their design group was going to be located and just the macroeconomics of the world, they want to invest in our group, but then something changes and priorities shift. And so they gave all of us a heads up that, hey, when your contract is up in 6 months, we're pretty confident that we're not going to be able to renew it out of our control.
Ooh.
And so this was probably the second time that I was let go in my career.
Yeah.
But it was done in a great way. I was given 6 months heads up to get my portfolio site in order. And
that is generous.
And I had the security to know that if I don't find something right away, I still have 6 more months of a paycheck and work to keep me going.
Yeah.
That being said, I hustled right away. I want to be in control of my destiny as much as possible.
Yeah.
And so of the group of maybe 15 of us that ultimately had to be let go, I was the first one to depart. I wasn't required to see my contract through all the way to the 6 months.
Oh, so you were able to get out before even the termination period.
Yeah.
Wow.
I feel like we live in a state with a equal opportunity where you can leave or they can let you go at any time. So yeah, I used that opportunity to interview at a couple agencies here in town. And I kind of just reached out and with low pressure, like, hey, I'm looking again. If you're interested, let's talk. Yeah. You know, you're at the top of my list. Before I start a more extensive search, I would love to talk with you first. And I think I only reached out to 2 or 3 places. And it was probably right place, right time.
Yeah.
But I was able to interview at Nemo Design. And they had had a position that was a freelance art director that they had been having people cycle in and out, and they just wanted some continuity. So I came in and I interviewed at Nemo and had a couple of interviews, like some group interviews where I interviewed with some of the principals, some of the people that I would be potentially working with to like make sure that the vibe check was right. One of the principals there was like more focused on the day to day. What can you do? What do you know? How can you help us? One of the other principals was like the dream big guy. He wanted to know what do you really want to be doing? Do you want to be directing ad commercials? Do you want to be, you know, I had designed my own card game, like a board game card game.
Yeah.
And that was something that was very fresh. That was kind of like my side project hobby that I was doing while I was at Adidas. And so that was something that I had just put on my portfolio and I could talk about, and I had kickstarted it and ultimately like met my goal of, I think it was $20,000 to pay for all of that. And at Nemo, they had had a client who was interested in kickstarting. So that was a relevant topic at the time. So I could bring some experience and knowledge to that problem that they had on hand.
Yeah.
And so the vibes were right and the experience was right. And that landed me a gig as a senior art director at Nemo. And again, I worked there for almost 8 years. So kind of equivalent to the time that I ultimately had at Sasquatch as well. And much in the way that I worked my way up at Sasquatch from production designer to art director, same thing happened at Nemo, that over that 7 or 8 year period, I got promoted to ACD and then creative director.
Yeah. That's a whole like long journey. Like I'm also just amazed that you were able to pass the, you know, like the Barbara Walters, if you could be any tree, what tree would it be test?
Yes.
Cause those are always impossible questions. And you managed to find the thing that was exactly what they actually needed.
Yeah. It's funny when I've been interviewing, it's very easy to talk about the day to day and the skill sets and the things you're interested in. But as I talk to some of these like executive creative directors, or maybe the more big picture person, they all have like a wild card question or two that I am maybe not prepared for. And it humbles me to say, oh, that's a good question. I'm going to need a second to think about that. And at least have that foresight now to like, much like the press check, don't just go in, say, you know, thinking you can do it. It's okay to take a moment and reflect and ask questions back. But the one executive creative director at Nemo is known for having these big questions or thinking outside the box. And it's sometimes that can be intimidating.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're at Nemo for almost 8 years. Like, what do you end up doing while you're there?
So for the first half of it, I would say, my job there was to lead the work that was for their Nike accounts.
Yeah.
Originally working in the, Nike 6.0 was their extreme or alternative sports brand. And that kind of shifted into Nike skateboarding. And so that's how Nemo got into working with Nike. But
hold on, Nike 6.0.
Oh yeah. If you don't remember,
what is the rationale behind that number?
I think it was, and again, I wasn't at Nemo at this time.
This is so much better that you got to upgrade from Nike 5.5. There's some bugs in that one. You got to go to 6. I mean, don't wait for 6.01 to launch. I know people wait for the bug fix, but yeah, it's like much better.
So, you know, I'm not an action sports guy. I'm not a skateboarder or BMX biker or a wakeboarder by trade. So for people who are listening, I might be getting something wrong. But Nike 6.0 was Nike trying to appeal to that youthful generation of action sports. And they were targeting
the X Games.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they were targeting 6 different of those action sports. So like snowboarding, wakeboarding, skateboarding, BMX, 2 others.
2 other things that Crash Bandicoot would also do.
Forgive me. And so
jumping on boxes and having a little mask guy that protects him. Yeah, those are the 6.
So while I wasn't involved in that campaign or those products specifically, I remember the design and the ads for those at the time, and they were awesome. And they were out there and they were wild and weird, and they appealed to the 20 to 25 year old person who resonated with that kind of aesthetic in those sports. And so they helped grow that small ragtag product from some small number like 2 million to 80 million. I don't know the exact number. If you go, there's a case study probably on the Nemo Design website that talks all about that. But they really got credit and clout within Nike for helping be authentic to that type of consumer. And then that got them into working with golf and running and this and that. And so when I was brought in, there were different consumer facing projects and also internal Nike projects that we were working on, whether that was like a new website for the Nike technology group. It's their internal IT group. They just needed a website that communicated X, Y, and Z, and we designed something great for them. Ultimately, I helped win some business where we were like the agency of record for Nike baseball and softball. And that was a relationship that lasted for like 4 years. And then we had gotten some inroads in with the Nike licensing department, where you might not know it, but like Nike sunglasses, like their eyewear, is not made by Nike. It's made by a sunglass company who licenses it, but they have to find their own agency to help with their design and advertising and communication.
Oh, interesting.
But it has to adhere to Nike standards.
Yeah.
And Nike Swimwear was another licensee. That was a relationship that was like for 3 or 4 years where we were their agency of record.
Wow.
So that comes with, you know, helping sometimes to advise on maybe graphics for swimwear. We, you know, would go on photo shoots, whether that's for the eyewear or for the swimwear, and like go to Hawaii or California.
I think, you know, you were talking early on about like going on the beer trip to explore different beers.
Yeah.
This sounds even better than that.
There was like a 5-day trip 1 year where we went to the Big Island of Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And it was it's Nike. So it's what do active people use eyewear for? And it's for kayaking and paddleboarding and going on boats and going on hikes. And this is the sunglasses that you can use for running, but you can also use it for, you know, on water and polarization and thing, you know, sunglasses for that.
You got to test all of them too.
So it was really fun that, you know, it was combining athleticism with, you know, that could be baseball, that could be eyewear, that could be swimwear. It's really fun. And then also helping these, whether it's the company or whether it's the category, help them with other needs that they have. Like they have yearly presentations where they have to make sales pitches. They have these more business-minded presentations that need to look good. And you can plop a good photo in there, but the design matters in these other instances on the B2B side, not just the B2C side.
So that's like the front half of your time with Nemo. What's the back half?
So the back half is helping to do that with other clients like the North Face or Tom's Footwear. So a lot of those I would say are like campaigns and content and design. And it's more kind of like downstream in advertising and design. What is another function that Nemo Design does is more like brand foundation, brand guidelines, more upstream, helping define what a brand is, what they look and feel like, how do they sound. And so some of that is just brand guidelines. There's a process in place, there's a structure, and that can be applied to whatever the need is.
Yeah.
And it's great if you live and breathe that brand, but it's not necessary. That we can all learn and apply our design knowledge, and with that drive for curiosity, you can learn about Tom's shoes. I don't know much about women's shoes, but I don't have to be an expert on it. The client is an expert on it. Or I had some great designers on my team who were women who were younger than me who might actually resonate more with the target audience. It was really funny. There was one Zoom call with Tom's Footwear where I think it was the first time that I, on this call, it's like Brady Bunch style on Zoom, us and the client, and there's maybe 10 to 15 people. And I was the only guy on the client. And they were talking about, we're choosing the clothes for the photo shoot. And I have no idea whether what kind of linen would flow well at this time of season. So I just, even though I'm supposed to be the creative director who's leading the voice and the charge of the creative insight and team, I shut up because I'm not the person who's an expert on this.
Yeah.
I've got a partner here and a designer who's much more fashionable than I am. And I'm going to let her take this. And she did great. I thought when I was younger, I thought I could be the expert on something I didn't know in press checks, and I messed it up. I learned that when it came time, you don't have to be the expert. You can rely on and lean on someone else, or you can say, we don't know. We'll get back to you about that.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that is, as you get older, you become much more aware of what you don't know and that there are there are real limitations in terms of, like, you know, where you can insert yourself and, like, where you can essentially improv your way through a situation. And yeah, like, you know, the chance to stop talking becomes like it's more clear when you need to do that, like, as you get older. So, like, that's what you're doing, like, throughout your time at Nemo, like, but you are no longer at Nemo. Do you want to kind of talk about, like, that process?
No comment.
Okay.
No, just kidding.
really thought I stepped on a landmine.
No,
there.
just kidding. This would be another good time for a radio break.
Yeah.
When I, you know what makes me feel comfortable? This MeUndies underwear. Fashionable.
Wow.
Lots of different cuts and patterns and styles. Use code did I do that at checkout at MeUndies.com for 15% off your subscription.
And this is subscription underwear, a thing that I have heard advertised on other podcasts, and it makes tons of sense. Yeah.
We could get them to do, we
just
got
constant.
We've got metal rulers and subscription underwear.
If you will have to pay more to make the underwear stop coming. The underwear will just keep arriving.
There's no phone number. It's a no reply email.
No,
you cannot stop.
It's in a refrigerator size box that says underwear that will be delivered to your doorstop. You cannot move it from your doorstop. It must stay there. And if you want it to go away, well, here's the number you wire transfer the money to, man. Anyway, use offer code did I do that at MeUndies, and then you get 10% off your subscription. Okay.
And now back to the podcast. That's my zany voice.
I love it.
Okay.
So, yeah, where do you go from here?
So my time came to an end at Nemo Design a couple months ago. Like many agencies right now, they're struggling with retaining clients and they're having to eliminate positions. And unfortunately, me and some other people got our positions eliminated a couple months ago.
Yes.
And
this is a thing that is happening, like, this week, all over the industry.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't feel alone. There's great support groups out there, people on LinkedIn that you can find. But what I will say is I credit Nemo Design with handling layoffs or positions being eliminated in a very human way. And they're a very transparent agency. They have monthly meetings, stand-up meetings, where they talk about how we're doing, how the agency's doing. They have twice a year, very transparent with financials and goals. And so it wasn't a surprise to anyone that there might be layoffs. We were all working towards that. And during COVID times, you know, same thing with Sasquatch. At Nemo, the partners took some pay cuts. The agency went down to, like, everyone at 4 days a week so that we didn't have to lay anyone off.
Yeah.
And we got through COVID times without having any major layoffs as well.
Which is incredible because, like, the ad industry just, like, stopped entirely during that.
I think it's, again, an agency who is scrappy, who is, you know, doesn't have a lot of bloat, can figure out a way to do that. One of the tenets of Nemo Design is figure it out. And that means learning a new skill or helping out when you need to. And that's what got the agency through.
Yeah.
So when it came time for layoffs, you know, there was a lead up to it where that might happen. I didn't think it would be me, but it was. And they had a program there, a transitional period. So even though that today they're letting us know that these positions are being eliminated, you're not being kicked to the curb that day. You could stay on for, I think it was 2 extra weeks or a month. I can't remember exactly what it was. But
so
there was
a little bit of what you had at Adidas, where you had a little bit of lead up.
There was a transition period where for agreeing for that time, it was like I would help transition my work to someone else, or I had a lot of knowledge that I needed to offload certain clients or processes as being a senior member of their creative team.
Yeah, 7 years of knowledge is a lot of institutional knowledge.
Like, I needed to figure out how to get all the, like, Figma ownership over to someone else
that,
like, it wouldn't die when an email goes away.
Yeah.
things like that. And so part of it is I help transition my knowledge and projects out, and they help with interviews or recommendations and placement. It was, you know, a great way. And I didn't hold any ill will against the partners who had to make that decision. I even joked with them afterwards, like, I wanted to break up with you. I didn't want you to break up with me. If a dream job had come along, and to be honest, I had applied for a dream job here or there,
yeah,
you know, never getting interviews or never like landing it. But had the dream job come along, I would have said goodbye to them.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. So right now, I'm looking for that dream job, looking for that agency or brand. And I've found some. The timing just hasn't worked out, but I'm freelancing right now, and that's going well.
Yeah. And like, you know, you are an experienced creative director. Like, you've done work all over the place in a bunch of different fields that are connected to here. Like, I think there are a lot of places that would be incredibly lucky to have somebody like you. Speaking of that, where do people go if they potentially want to hire you, or if they just want to learn more about the stuff that you do?
Oh, yeah. Thanks. This is the plug?
This is the plug.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to plugs.
Okay. Well,
Wouldn't it be great if we had a plugs theme song like Comedy Bang Bang? Just inserting some ideas into listeners' heads if they want to make songs for me. I don't know. Maybe.
Well, I have an internet portfolio page site on the internet. It's www.mattgraff.com. That's my name, MattGraff. You can also use the Google,
yeah,
or use the LinkedIn. You'll figure it out.
You are certainly the most prominent Matt Graff,
yes,
on there.
I actually had a different Matt Graff reach out to me.
Did you really?
I've had two. There is one who works in graphic design, and he wanted the URL that I squatted on 20 years ago.
Oh.
And he was like, hey, my name's Matt Graff. But he had, I don't think he has it anymore, but he had the site Matt Graphics with an IX at the end.
Oh, boy.
Very extreme.
I think I can see this website without even looking at it.
I don't mean to dog on the other Matt Graff, but when I went and visited the extreme site with the X,
uh-huh,
it was what you're picturing.
Yeah. And he, I'm sure, was not at all dressed like a certain bandicoot that we know and love.
Yes.
Wallet chain to the extreme. Yeah, that's so funny. My name is just weirdly distinctive enough that it's like kind of a problem. But I could never get social media names that were Sean Schumacher, because there is a very prominent, I don't want to say he was a drug dealer, but he certainly had a very sketchy MySpace page back in the day. And now he seems to be working in real estate.
Okay.
That's a fairly normal transition. Again, not to cast aspersions at this other Sean Schumacher, but yeah, certainly I'm sure he's doing great work in the real estate game, and no one should go look up his old MySpace,
yeah,
if that was him.
The goal is to build this podcast. Season 4 is going to be great, and then you will overtake him in the Google search rankings.
Yeah, and then he will sue me, and then it all works out.
Yeah,
so people should go and pay you a follow, pay you a visit.
Pay me money.
Pay you a money.
It's transactional.
It is, in fact, literally transactional. But yes, people should go and do that. I need to pull up the things that I say at the end of the show, and those are all gone. Oh, no.
If we only had a third sponsor break, but we don't.
Yeah, if we
don't. We don't.
No, no one else will
it's
give me
rulers
money.
Rulers and underwear. That's
it's rulers it. And underwear. Those are the only two things. And I don't know why I signed that contract, but those are the only two things that I'm contractually allowed to advertise. Is this even the right one?
We can edit this out in post.
We absolutely are going to have to. Nothing kills momentum like this part.
Well, if the momentum killer is at the end, at yeah, least it's.
I suppose so. So, thank you so much for being here, Matt. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
Yeah, and
it's been fun.
The listeners cannot hear that there was a huge gap there. That was me trying to find copy to remind me to thank you.
We can blame it on a streetcar or some street noise. Or,
yeah, truly. Yeah, there's choo-choo-choo-choo. Yeah, ambulance sound. Watch out. Wee! Yeah, it wasn't just me planning things poorly. But yeah, thank you. And also, listeners, hey, If you like this show, then give it a subscription in whatever service you use for that, be that Apple Podcasts, be that Spotify, be that Overcast, heck, even YouTube. We're on YouTube now. So give it a subscription. You can also find more about this show by visiting us on the web, dididothat.design. That's where you can get to all our social media, as well as good images that go along with each and every episode, including this one. This has been Did I Do That? I'm Sean Schumacher. And as we always say at the close of every episode,
did I do that?
Perfect. Perfect take. All right. Bye. 'Waving at goodbye.
Am I supposed to leave when you wave? Is that the other cue?
I guess so. I don't know what to make of that. I don't think I normally wave, but well, bye.
Blame it on the cold.
Blame it on the cold. Thank you so much. That was such a delight. Oh,
yeah, hopefully we get some sponsors.
Yeah. Oh my god, those were so. Thank you. Those were beautiful. like little comedy gemstones. We'll be right back.